The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
Tonight I'd like to talk about some of the ways that our mind makes our life difficult and how we can work with that. In our experience, as we go through our day, as we meet people and do things, we encounter things that are pleasant, we encounter things that are unpleasant, and we encounter things that are neutral. And when we encounter things that are pleasant, usually we like them, we want them. And when we encounter things that are unpleasant, we usually don't like them, we don't want them, we want to get rid of them. When we encounter things that are neutral, we often don't notice them at all. We kind of space out around them. So these three areas, things that are pleasant, things that are unpleasant, things that are neutral, pretty much everything in our experience has one of those three flavors. And that flavor of our experience sort of leads us towards either spacing out if it's neutral, or wanting if it's pleasant, or not wanting if it's unpleasant. And this basically leads us to three flavors of mind states: greed, where we want things; aversion, where we want to get rid of things; and delusion, where we're basically not noticing things or not seeing things clearly, not seeing things as they are. So tonight I'd like to mostly talk about aversion. This is the state of responding to things that are unpleasant. Often we feel like we need to fix them, change them, escape from them, get rid of them somehow. And there's two basic flavors of this aversive mind when we encounter something that's unpleasant. Often there's the quality of kind of lashing out or wanting to push away the thing. And that's got the flavor of anger, the flavor of lashing out. Or there's the flavor of wanting to remove oneself from the situation if it's unpleasant. An unpleasant situation, get me out of here. That's the flavor of fear. So those are the two basic flavors, that either when something is unpleasant in our environment, we want to do something to the environment to fix it, actually change the environment and manipulate the environment, change the people, change the situation, fix, change, or we want to escape. We want to remove ourselves from the situation. Situation can stay the way it is, but I'm leaving, thank you very much. So that's the two basic ways that we respond in this mind state of aversion, of wanting things, of wanting to get rid of the unpleasant in some way. So there's many different degrees of aversion in both of these flavors. I'm just going to name some of them so that you get a sense of the breadth of the quality of this aversion. Well, there's anger and fear, which I've just mentioned, frustration, ill will, irritation, annoyance, contempt, dread, terror, dislike, resistance. So it ranges from the mild, from the sense of dislike and mild resistance, to out-and-out hatred and rage, from mild anxiety to full-on terror. All of these are manifestations of aversion. So why do we talk about this? What's the relationship between aversion and our spiritual life? Why do we even talk about this? Often we think about, well, if I was spiritual, well, then I wouldn't be feeling something like that. Anger's not a part of being a spiritual person. Or clearly, if I was more awake, I wouldn't be afraid of all of these things. Well, actually, the path to our awaking up lies through these experiences. There's a quote from Dostoevsky. What seems bad to you in yourself, so if you feel like anger, aversion, fear is bad, what seems bad to you in yourself is purified by the very fact that you have noticed it in yourself. And that's how this works, this purification process of our spiritual life. We notice it in ourselves. We begin to understand our experience. So part of our spiritual life is understanding aversion, understanding how it functions in our lives, understanding how it comes into being, understanding how we feel when we're in these states. And this understanding itself purifies and can lead to the release of these states. So most of these flavors of aversion that I mentioned, anger, frustration, fear, dread, terror, rage, irritation, annoyance, all of those, they're forms of emotions. Generally what we might call afflictive emotions. They're ones that are difficult for us. And any emotion, particularly these afflictive emotions, are worth understanding. And they have, all emotions have basically three aspects to them. There's an aspect of the feeling itself, the feeling of the emotion itself. There's the aspect of the thoughts around the emotion. Often there's a very strong connection between an emotion and the thoughts about it. Particular emotion tends to lead to a particular pattern of thinking. There's a very strong relationship between the feeling and the thinking. And then there's the experience in the body. So there's a physical manifestation of most of these experiences. So for example, with anger, if we just think about how these three aspects are demonstrated with the experience of anger. The thoughts around anger might be something along the lines of, they done me wrong. They shouldn't have done that. That kind of flavor of thought. The feeling of anger is an unpleasant feeling, and it's usually an outward motion, a kind of a lashing out. The energy of anger tends to move out. We want to do something about it. So there's this feeling of the energy of anger moving outwards. And in the body, the feeling in the body, the bodily experience of anger can be many different things. In my own experience, I've experienced it as a kind of a feeling of rising pressure and heat, this sense of rising up and full pressure and getting into an intense feeling of heat. So those three aspects, the bodily experience, the mental experience, the mental emotion itself, and the thoughts are usually all present to some form or other, some degree or other, in the experience of anger. Now, fear has a slightly different flavor, and you all know this, actually. You know, if you think about anger, if you even call the word anger up in your mind, you probably have a sense of it, what it means to you, how it's felt in your body and mind. And when you call up the word fear, there's a different feeling in your mind, in your body. The feeling in the emotional feeling of fear often has this feeling of kind of withdrawal or pulling back, as opposed to the energy kind of moving out. It coils in. The energy kind of coils in. There's a feeling of protecting and needing to protect. The bodily experience, again, can be very different for me, for different people. For me, I often have an experience of contraction somewhere in the throat, perhaps, in the pit of the stomach, a feeling of unsettledness in the stomach, a kind of a rising energy in the body, perhaps. And the thoughts around fear, something bad is going to happen. This bad thing is going to happen. I need to protect myself, something like that. I'm in danger. So in our observation, in our understanding of aversion, it's really helpful to know that there are these three aspects. And our understanding of aversion, the way we understand aversion, is not so much by thinking about it, but more by turning to directly experience it. Can we directly experience the feeling of aversion? The feeling of anger, the feeling of fear, the feeling of irritation, the feeling of annoyance. Can we directly experience that? It's this direct experiencing that is the understanding that is meant. When I say understand suffering, understand aversion. So it's an understanding through using mindfulness, through a non-judgmental observation. So turning our attention away from the thing we are reacting to in the world. Whatever is unpleasant in the environment, whether it's a friend that's angry with us and we're responding in anger, or a coworker perhaps that's doing something that's really annoying, or a situation that feels just out of control that you just want to escape from. Whatever it is, our attention tends to be out in the world trying to figure out how to either fix it, change it, control it, or get myself out of the situation. That's what our typical movement is. That's our typical response. Try to do something to the world. So our attention is directed outward, either outward to the things or outward to how can I remove myself. And the kind of counterintuitive exploration here for us is, rather than having our attention out in the world like that, to turn the attention to the feeling itself. What does it feel like to be angry, irritated, annoyed, afraid? What is the experience of being a human being having that experience? What is that experience? So we turn and look at our experience, and we will see that there are thoughts happening. He done me wrong. They shouldn't have done that. How can I fix this? How can I change that? How can I get rid of this? So there's a thoughts happening right now. There's the emotion itself, the feeling of rage or annoyance or irritation. And there's the bodily experience. So all three of those things are happening to us in the present moment. And they kind of interweave. They impact each other. So the thoughts, for instance, around our emotion. The more we think about how they shouldn't have done that to me, the angrier we'll get. It's like the thought process around the emotion is just this nourishment for that emotion. So it supports that emotion getting stronger and stronger. The more we think about it, the stronger the feeling gets. So that's one way that we start to notice things about our experience. We start to notice that the more we think about it, the stronger the feeling gets. So that's one clue for us. It's helpful in turning the attention to our experience to see if we can let go of the thoughts around the experience in favor of being with the felt sense of the experience. What does it feel like? What does the emotion feel like? What does the body feel like? Seeing if you can let go of the thoughts in favor of touching into the physicality of it. Very supportive movement in terms of beginning to understand these emotions. One of the things we usually recognize when we turn our attention this way, instead of putting our attention out in the world to try to fix things and change things and manipulate things or escape, is that it doesn't feel very good to be in this state. It's not a pleasant state to be in when we're angry or irritated or annoyed or frustrated or fearful. It does not feel good. And that's a large reason why we try to change the environment, because we don't want to feel that feeling. So that brings up the question, why feel the feeling? Why do I want to do that? Why on earth would I want to just feel the feeling when I could simply change the environment or try to change the environment? The answer to that has kind of got two parts to it. Part of it is that when we try to change the environment, often we are expecting a particular result. So, for instance, you're dealing with an angry coworker, and you feel like, well, this is inappropriate, so you tell them, this is inappropriate behavior, you know, you need to not be doing that. And what happens? Well, they may respond, oh, I guess you're right. But more likely, they'll respond defensively and get even more angry, which brings up more anger. So often what we see when we try to manipulate and control the environment is that it just hooks us onto this cycle of having to manipulate the environment in order to not be experiencing something, or trying to manipulate the environment so that we won't feel the anger. And when we can't manipulate the environment in the way that we want, it just makes the process of the anger, the aversion, get even stronger. So part of this is beginning to recognize that we don't have that much control over what's happening around us. And learning how to be with the feeling of the anger and see what part of our experience of the anger is self-generated. Because actually a large part of the experience of anger actually is coming because of us. We are responding in a way that is generating the anger inside of us. The same situation, the same coworker saying something or doing something may not affect somebody else in the same way that's affecting us, or it may affect us in a different way on a different day. If we've come from home and had an argument with our spouse, and we're meeting this coworker, we may be more inclined to be reactive. So what's happening in us is what we have a little more, control really. We don't have that much control over it, but there's more opportunity to turn the ship in the direction of skillfulness within ourselves than it is to manipulate the whole environment. So that we have more choice about how we respond than we do about how to fix and change the environment. So that's part of the answer of why to observe this feeling internally. The other aspect of it is The practice that we explore here of being mindful and paying attention to our experience is not about just sitting back and letting things happen and just watching our own experience of it and not doing anything in the world. Sometimes it sounds like that when we talk about, well, turn towards the experience of the feeling, see what it feels like, as opposed to trying to fix or change the world. Well, partly we want to encourage you to explore that feeling because it's so counterintuitive to do that shift, to make that shift, to turn towards our own experience. It's very counterintuitive to make that shift and to let go of trying to manipulate the world. So turning towards that, we start to learn something about ourselves and how we contribute to our own suffering. But we don't necessarily have to simply sit back and just observe ourselves. This is not simply about observing. It's about learning how to respond to the world skillfully. So when we are in a state of anger or irritation, a state of aversion, that's not the most skillful place from which to respond to the environment. If we can respond to the environment from a place of compassion, of generosity, of kindness, that is a more skillful way to interact with the world. So in the observing ourselves in that state, part of what we learn is how to kind of take in the fact that, okay, I'm angry here. Is there a way that I can respond to this situation so that I'm not simply lashing out of anger, but I'm at least recognizing that I'm angry and trying to temper that in my response to the world? So this turning towards supports our own beginning to understand how we feel, how these states are created in our experience, and it helps us to see that we can respond to the world in a gentler way, so that we don't have to be driven by these emotions. When we can observe the emotions, when we can observe these difficult emotions, instead of just simply reacting out of them, when we can observe them, we have an opportunity to guide how we respond while we're feeling that way. And this is skillful. This supports our not enmeshing ourselves more deeply into these difficult states. I know you've all experienced things like this, of things escalating as you react. Two people reacting out of anger. It just builds. So can we turn the attention, recognize, at least acknowledge that fact, and see, can I bring something a little more peaceful to the interaction? I may not be able to completely let go of this anger and respond from complete peacefulness, but perhaps I can bring a little bit of peacefulness to this situation. So this turning towards our difficult emotions, turning towards these experiences, it doesn't feel pleasant when we first start to do this. It's challenging for us because we're not really used to hanging out with our own anger. We're much more used to trying to get rid of the anger by fixing the environment. But this turning towards non-judgmentally beginning to observe our experience, hopefully letting go of the thoughts and coming into the bodily experience. Sometimes it's said this is the suffering that leads to the end of suffering. Because as we understand and observe our anger, our fear, we are not caught in its grip quite so strongly. There's a little bit of space around the experience. we start to see these emotions as a process. We start to see how they come into being. So in a moment, anger can be created based on responding to something that's happening here and now. So we're in an office and somebody's doing something and it just triggers us right then and there. So there's a response to an actual situation right here and now. So there's the situation, then there's how it hits us. There's all of our history. Like I mentioned a little earlier, perhaps having had an argument with a spouse in the morning makes us perhaps a little less resilient. So that particular person doing that thing just hits us wrong. So there's our history coming into this moment, there's the thing that's happening, and there's our response right here in this moment. So we start to see all of these pieces coming together, these causes and conditions coming together that trigger this feeling inside of us. Often in that process, thoughts are born in that process of that emotion coming into being. There's thoughts that start to happen, and those thoughts often will fuel the emotion, making it stronger and stronger. So part of what happens as we start to observe our emotions, as we turn towards the experience of anger and begin to pay attention to it, we start to catch this process happening. So we see how we're feeling in this moment, a little grinchy from this argument. We see the person doing something, and we see that irritation just beginning in our experience. We see all of that before the thoughts start churning, and it feeds the emotion to make it stronger and stronger. So the movement of turning towards can help to short-circuit this process by which these emotions get out of control for us. It's very powerful to turn towards our experience of these emotions. Often, these feelings of emotion, of anger, irritation, annoyance, fear, despair, are born not from something that's happening right here and right now, but they're born from thoughts. We think about something that happened in the past, and we get angry. We remember a friend who did something to us 3 years ago, and we get angry right here and right now. Or we think about something that might happen a week from now, and we get afraid. So we construct an idea in our mind, and we get afraid of it. So what's happening here, as we start to observe our emotions, we begin to see what happens to us in this process. A thought appears in the mind. An image of this friend, perhaps. An image of a time when we were having a good time together. And then a memory comes back of, oh, but they did that thing. Then there's a reaction to that, and the anger begins. All of these things are separate processes. They're separate steps leading from one to the other. The memory of the friend, the original memory of doing something together, that memory itself doesn't have the anger in it. The anger is created as the other memory comes in of what they did, and then we start to think about it. So the anger is a process of causes and conditions coming together in the moment that create this feeling. So these emotions that are happening, these difficult emotions, are happening now. Sometimes when we're suffering or angry about something that happened in the past, that can be hard to see how that works, because it feels like that anger has just kind of been simmering there all of those years, and that you're just kind of tapping into that anger that has been there all along. But actually, while there's this history or this pattern that's kind of there, or a tendency for that anger to be formed because of the patterns, the causes and conditions of your life, that anger is actually created in the moment. The thought arises, the response arises, and the anger is born right then and there. So we start to see this happening, and we begin to see that actually, with that mindful attention to our experience, we can see this process unfolding. We can see the thought of the friend. We can see the memory of what they did. We can see the anger beginning to arise. And it is possible, though not always, doesn't always happen, it's possible for the mind to make a different choice than to get angry. It is possible for the mind to recognize, oh, I'm headed towards anger here. When we pay attention to our experience of these difficult emotions, and part of the time we're paying attention to the feeling of anger, the feeling of fear, and recognizing, wow, this doesn't feel very good. This is suffering. Part of what that's doing is training our mind to understand that when these feelings happen, they bring suffering along with them. These feelings are actually a choice. There's a way in which we choose to get angry. We choose to be afraid. It doesn't seem to feel like it. It feels like something in our subconscious is doing that. But it's actually a choice. And these choices can become conscious through this mindful attention. So as we pay attention to these feelings and recognize anger is suffering, fear is suffering, if at some moment we begin to see this process coming into being, we start to see anger being created in the moment, the mind, you don't have to do this. You don't have to make a choice to not go there. The mind has been instructed, that way lies suffering, because we've been paying attention. We've been observing how anger is suffering. So when we see this process coming into being, the mind will recognize at some point, I don't need to go there. And it will let it go. It will choose to not go there. It will choose to not suffer. That's one of the big benefits of this turning towards the experience of these aversive states of mind. So we begin to catch our reactions more quickly. We see that when we catch our reactions more quickly, we're not suffering as much. The suffering of mild irritation is much easier to deal with than the suffering of rage. So we catch our reactions more quickly with this turning towards our emotions. And we can actually notice the very beginning of a pattern forming and seeing that we don't have to go there. Just simply the mind letting it go. Sometimes, I've talked quite a bit about turning towards these emotions. Sometimes these emotions can be really strong. They can be overwhelming. And sometimes they can be stronger than our ability to be mindful of them. So sometimes when we turn our attention, try to turn our attention towards these difficult, afflictive emotions, we find ourselves swamped. If we turn our attention towards anger, we find ourselves just basically pulled into the anger. Essentially, because the anger is stronger than our ability to be mindful of it in that particular situation at that particular time. So this begins to point to our needing to use skillful means for working with some of these states when they're overwhelming. If you find it difficult to be with a state of anger, if it just is getting worse, or a state of fear, if being with the fear just kind of makes the fear get worse and worse and worse, then it's probably not a good thing to try to directly pay attention to those states at that time if they are leading to overwhelm. So this is learning about skillful avoidance. How do we skillfully put aside some of these difficult states? There's a number of different approaches here, but it's different for each person. It's different for each of you. What supports your being able to be present while something difficult is happening? The key here for this skillful avoidance is not to use aversion to avoid the experience. That is just adding to the aversion. So if you're feeling angry and you recognize, okay, I can't pay attention to this, it can't be a sense of, you've got to get out of here, I can't pay attention to you. It can't be a kind of an aversive response to the anger in order to avoid it. It's got to be a more compassionate response, more of a sense of, not now. It's not so helpful to try to pay attention to this. I need to open up and be a little more spacious. So to kind of just turn attention away from. So it's like, you know, it's almost like that. The anger's happening over here, and we just kind of, okay, you do your thing. I'm just going to pay attention to this thing over here. I'm going to go take a walk in nature and see if I can hang out with the trees and be with the sound of the birds and the wind and the feeling of the sun on my face. Can I hang out with those things and let go of the anger for a while? It's kind of replacing the experience, not to try to push it away or get rid of it, but to support your mind so that it's not just sucked in to that feeling. This was a huge learning piece, a learning lesson for me around working with anger in particular, that I discovered it did suck me in, this one particular kind of anger with this person. Every time I tried to turn my attention to it, it just sucked me in. And so I learned to say, not now. And for me, what helped was turning my attention to something neutral in my experience. So it wasn't a skillful avoidance by going to space out, watching television, or doing something like that. It was turning my attention to something else in my experience here and now. And for me, often that was my feet on the ground. I often was walking when I got into these angry states. And so just when I noticed them coming up, I would clearly acknowledge that feeling. Yep, I see you, anger. And I'm going to pay attention to my feet right now. You can do your thing. I'm just going to put my attention in my feet. This was incredibly skillful, a skillful way for me to deal with that anger. And over time, that particular anger really began to loosen, not by ever really looking at it directly, but simply through letting it be and not allowing it to kind of run the show in my subconscious. Because the mindful attention to the neutral feeling of the feet on the ground essentially keeps the mind in the present moment and doesn't let the kind of subconscious manipulation of that anger take over. That kind of subconscious manipulation of the anger happens when we're in a state of delusion, when we're not attentive. If we can bring our attention to something that's happening here and now, other than the anger, that can be a very skillful response to the anger or other difficult aversive emotions. So learning about skillful avoidance when it's overwhelming. I talked a little while ago about not acting out of the anger in terms of taking action in the world. And I want to speak to that just a little more, because I think it's really important that we not feel like this practice means just sitting, staring at our navels, not taking action in the world. Because this practice is about bringing skillful action to the world. The action, the motivation is really the key. The motivation behind what we do is what supports our movement away from reinforcing these patterns of difficult emotions. So if we are acting out of anger or fear, we are reinforcing anger and fear. If the motivation behind the action is anger or fear, we are reinforcing anger or fear. If the motivation behind the action is generosity, compassion, kindness, we are reinforcing those qualities. So it's looking at what the motivation is behind what we do that helps us to choose when to act and when to hold back. If we find that there's no way to act except out of anger, that might be a time to hold back and not act. If we can see the anger and recognize, yes, there's the anger there, but can bring in some of this sense of kindness and compassion in making the action, that's a way that we can act. Even though there is this mixed motivation, there's some of the anger there, and there's some of this feeling of kindness and compassion there. If we can, in seeing that mixed motivation, land a little bit, try at least to consciously choose to act out of the compassion, as opposed to choosing to act out of the anger, that will support the weakening of the anger and the cultivation of the compassion and the kindness. Unhooking us from the pattern of anger, the pattern of aversion. In this process of taking action in the world, it's really, really helpful to let go of needing a particular result to happen as a result of our actions. We can aspire towards a particular result, but if we need a particular result to happen, then we will suffer if that doesn't happen. If we need a particular result to happen, if we have a strong feeling of wanting for a particular result to happen, and that thing does happen, then we are actually reinforcing this pattern of desire, of wanting things to be the way we want them to be, and feeling like we can control and manipulate and fix things. There's a way that we can engage with the world, trying to sculpt or create something in the world, but being completely open about what is created, to not having it have to look a certain way. There's so many things, different causes and conditions in the world, that there's no way we can control all of them. But what we can have some say over is what the state of our mind is as we choose to act in the world. And that's a very powerful way to respond, through consciously knowing how we are motivated to act and choosing as much as possible to act from skillful motivations. So when these difficult states come up, these aversive states, our spiritual path lies in understanding them, not in trying to get rid of them themselves, but in turning towards them. So our path, when these states arise, when anger arises, our spiritual path is not separate from the anger. It's intimately connected with it to understand that experience. When we're turning our attention towards these states, we're essentially understanding something about ourselves. These states are created in our own minds. We meet ourselves when we turn towards these experiences. We're actually meeting who we are in this moment. So we're studying ourselves through studying these experiences. There's a famous quote by Zen Master Dogen. To study the way is to study the self. To study the self is to forget the self. To forget the self is to be enlightened by all things. So turning towards these experiences is this path. It is studying the way, studying ourselves. As we study ourselves, we see this is just a process happening. This is just a process. Causes and conditions came together to create this experience in this moment. There's no one here doing it. To study the self is to forget the self. To forget the self is to be enlightened by all things. So it doesn't really matter what we're paying attention to. It's that non-judgmental observation of our experience that is this studying of ourselves. And it is the path to understanding ourselves. So I'd like to take some time for questions or comments, if there's any. Any questions or comments about this topic? Yeah. And we use the microphone, so.
Okay, thank you. This is a perfect topic for me today.
Could you hold it up a little bit more?
Okay, can you hear me? I'm not sure how to formulate my question, but I recently had the experience of, without knowing what was going to happen, I came into a state of fear about some, started with anxiety that kept building and building and building about just a little inkling of a clue that something was going to change in my job. And knowing that I was going to get information not till a few days later, and that feeling kept building until it was a tremendous amount of fear that I had no real knowledge of why. The fear was totally out of proportion to the information that I had at hand, and I was even kind of led to believe that things were not going to go down a certain path. finally, 2 days later, I received the information that confirmed why I was in such a state of fear. When the body experiences something before the mind really knows, there's that maybe intuition or something else that's kicking in. Mm-hmm. I guess the question is, whether it's fear or whether it's anger, when you have that really strong sensation, which I couldn't get rid of for 2 days, and I couldn't ignore it. It was like right the elephant in the room. It was right in my face. So I just kept having these huge waves of fear, and I kept having to deal with it and deal with it and thinking, oh, my God, is this ever going to go away? Well, Anicca finally took over, and, of course, it did finally go away. But when you're using skillful means of being present with something and allowing it without trying to change it, how can that work in that in the situation where, I mean, eventually the mind does start playing in and going, okay, what could it possibly be? What's going to happen?
Right.
You know, why am I feeling this way? But when it's primarily a body sensation or a knowing, whether it's fear or anger, how can skillful means kind of transform that situation when it's
So it sounds like you're talking kind of like of a pre-verbal experience of anger or fear, in a sense. It's like there's not a lot of thoughts around it. It's just like...
Initially, there wasn't a lot of thought around it.
Right. Except it does sound like that feeling would come up, and then there would be something that could kick in that would say, well, what if, and you'd go off a little bit more. So there can be that kind of initial sense of fear arising, a kind of a pre-verbal fear. And, you know, that can come from many things. I mean, it might be an intuitive sense that you're picking up from the people who are giving you the information. It also might have something to do with, you know, something that happened in your past, you know, that could be, you know, feeding into that sense. I think this kind of pre-verbal fear has perhaps something from the past. You know, people who have had kind of trauma in birth, for instance, you know, if a cesarean section or something, you know, there can be a kind of a just generalized sense of non-safety, of fear that is around and gets triggered by various things. So partly it's just the being with that feeling and realizing, okay, this is just a feeling. It may indicate some kind of intuitive knowledge. You know, you found out that perhaps it did indicate a kind of intuitive knowing. You know, to just be with that experience. Now, to ask you don't have to go into details, but once that happened, was the experience, was there still fear?
Even though it was bad news about the job security.
Right.
It was changed.
So a lot of it has to do with our feeling of sense of
dread.
of dread of like what's going to happen in the future. It's just like there's this projection into the future and a kind of a coming up with all these scenarios of what could happen. So you know, part of it is just can you just be with that feeling?
Listening to you talk, I just wondered if I hadn't done something right, because why did it last so long? In other words, if I was with it, should it have lasted for days?
Sometimes these patterns are very strong, and that's a very common feeling, that I must be doing something wrong if it's lasting. But sometimes the patterns are strong. Sometimes, like I say, if it comes from something that's really pre-verbal from that time, like in the womb or something, you know, those patterns are very, very pervasive. And to expect them to go away on just being with them for a while, sometimes that doesn't happen. You know, it's kind of like we have to be patient around the observation, gathering data, being with, experiencing what it's like to be in that state. And simply recognizing, yes, it's like this, it's like this, it's this is suffering. There's an analogy that the Buddha uses about how these patterns fall apart in our experience. And, you know, he says that imagine if there's a shipwreck and there's a, you know, the wood and the rope and all of the parts of the boat are on the shore, and the sun and the sand and the wind and the waves slowly eat away at the parts of the ship. You know, if you got a rope there, you look at the rope day to day, there's not much change to that rope day by day. But very slowly, the sun, the sand, the wind are wearing away at that rope. And over the course of years, it will eventually disintegrate. And some of our patterns are strong, and they require that kind of real patient just being with, even though it doesn't look like much is changing. Dust doesn't look... That's the kind of way that my pattern of anger that I described, that I, instead of paying direct attention to it, I put attention on my feet. I was like, wow, you know, this doesn't feel like much is changing around this anger. But, you know, just continue to recognize it and then put my attention in my feet over and over and over and over and over again for years. And I didn't start to notice, actually, that over time that feeling of anger it came up less often. And then one day I discovered that it wasn't gone. It was actually gone. And I hadn't actually looked at it directly so much, but it had just slowly, slowly, slowly worn away through that meeting it. I see you, and I'm going to put my attention in my feet. So just that. Sometimes these things take a lot of patience and a lot of just gentle observation over and over again.
Thank you so much.
We have time for another one if there's another question. Yeah.
From your personal experience, when would you say it's you should act versus you should let go? Because, you know, if something like bothers you, like you kind of feel compelled to act, but at the same time, part of you wants to just like not worry about it, just let go and accept it. So.
That's a real, partly we have to see what happens when we act, what are the consequences when we act. So it's a process of experimentation for each of us to look at what's happening and to say, okay, I'm going to try to act in this situation and then see what the consequences are. Are the consequences further suffering for yourself or others? Or are the consequences skillful? So, and that will get more and more refined. That understanding of what is skillful and unskillful gets more and more refined as we explore this path. So being willing to make mistakes, to learn from our mistakes. I mean, we can't choose perfectly every time. I mean, we are imperfect human beings. So, you know, we are going to make mistakes, but being willing to recognize, okay, I chose that. This is what happened. This is how I chose. This is why I made that choice. This is the result. And what can I understand now about the situation? What can I understand so that maybe that kind of thing won't happen again? I could give you an example, but it's 9:00, so I will stop. So I'd like to stop on time. So thank you for your attention.